Hello and welcome to the final 2015 Limerick Sporting Podcast. Or Limerick Sporting Podcast. Sporting Limerick Podcast. It's been
fatigue.
A long year.
Fatigue.
It's been a long year. I haven't been alternated and squad rotation and all of that, unlike some rugby players, which we might talk about a bit more a little later. Welcome to the Sporting Limerick Podcast. Last one of the year. Don O'Sullivan of the Limerick Post, Jerome O'Connell of the Limerick Leader, and myself, Liam Ahern of Live 95 FM here with you. Looking forward to sport over the Christmas and all of that. But let's begin, Don. 7 days ago, we sat in this very studio, Studio 1 of Limerick's Live 95 FM, and you told us Munster Connacht would define Munster's season.
In a roundabout way.
You said it was a huge game.
Yeah, it was a massive game. Yeah.
And they ultimately lost in front of only 9,000 people, although Jerome says that doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
But they ultimately lost and were beaten by, this was no fluke, they were beaten by a far better side on the night.
Yeah, massive. I wouldn't say shock, because I think we all kind of touched on it last week, but massive loss for Munster at home. You know, I know crowds don't matter in terms of revenue as much as they used to, and Jerome was correct on that, but even the goodwill around the team now, you know, a lot of people questioning, you know, why would we go to the match last week when the players didn't seem like they wanted as much as Connacht. I think CJ Standers said it in his post-match interview, Connacht wanted it more. Connacht are the fairy tale story of the season so far, and Munster just aren't playing well. Now, Munster haven't been playing well for a while and just managed to get a couple of wins. They all know that too, but this month have Leicester back-to-back and Leinster, and then if you want to include the first week of January, you've Ulster. They're massive, massive games now, because not going to win the Champions Cup, they have to perform in the Pro 12.
Are we being a bit disingenuous to Connacht, Jerome, do you think? Like, Connacht are a very good team, and you know, a lot of people still think about them as the bottom team in Ireland in terms of the four provinces, but at the moment they're sitting top of the Pro 12.
Yeah, and like what they are is they're a very good unit. You know, I think they're working really, really well together. And one thing as well that I kind of shines out for me is that they've shopped well. You know, like who's making the impact for them, barring maybe one or two instances, it's guys that were imports or whatever you want to call them. I think the last day, I think, like, which is probably the first time it would have happened for me, that Munster looked like the raw, inexperienced side. You always felt in Munster kind of clashes, no matter how it was going, that when push came to shove, Munster would be the ones that would grab it by the neck and drive home, as happened most times. But the last day, it was the opposite. Who's going to win it? Looks like Connacht. Who's going to win it? Looks like Connacht. You know, they got scored at the end, but always throughout it, for me, they looked the experienced, composed side. I think we just got to maybe time to accept that from a Munster point of view, that there's a lot of raw guys out there. I don't see any absolute leaders. Now, I think there's two of them to come back, in fairness, in the pack from injury. But they're just missing that real, real leader. Maybe there's one of them on his way to France. But, you know, other than that, I mean Paul O'Connell, not Zeebo. But I just don't see the real leader there to grab it by the neck and just to pull him over the line.
It's weird that you're the second person in 2 days to say that to me. And isn't that weird?
There's no leaders.
Yeah. And that's mad.
Fairness,
for Tommy
O'Donnell and Peter O'Mahony to come back, which would be massive into any team.
Yeah, and huge ball carriers.
But they're so raw.
But as you said correctly, like in years gone by, and I know I don't want to lament about days gone by, you'd always look at a game like that, there was a kick of a ball in it, and Munster got a little bit of a break that they just kick on and win. Anthony Foley touched on it yesterday in the press conference. He said there was an overlap, a line out on Connacht's line, a poor kick chase, and someone else ran into contact. He called them coach killers, which I thought was a very weird kind of term to use. He was saying that, like, you know, the opportunity was there to win the game, we didn't win it. In the past, he's spoken about naivety of his players. You know, CJ Stender, the captain, has to come out and say, did the other team want it more than us at home? And you're right. But as we all know from covering all different types of sports, like, the leaders on the field is one thing, but somebody seems to be lacking in driving standards during the week as well, because the performance of a weekend is based on what you do during the week. And that's slipping ever so slightly now.
That management
every
team,
week,
just as the team, are also raw and largely inexperienced as well.
Yeah, it's Pat Lamb's third full season with Connacht. It's Anthony Foley's second, Leo Cullen's first, Les Kiskanen's first. It's interesting to see what mix there is. But sometimes as well, I think you can kind of forget. It's like watching the Premiership and you see Man City at the top, and traditionalists still want Man United and Liverpool and whoever, and Arsenal. But it's all about money. So the Champions Cup is now dominated by teams like English teams, and I know Liam will touch on the Leicester games in a while. But you'll see the difference in Leicester compared to Munster now, with just the squads that they have, the way they play rugby, how competitive their own league is compared to the Pro 12.
That said, you know, what is alarming, and has been for a few seasons now, is the lack of cutting edge there is in the Munster backline. And I mean, it's not this year that that has happened. It's been the last couple of years where, you know, Munster haven't scored all that many tries off the top of my head. You know, maybe a bit like Irish rugby. Ireland don't have that much of a cutting edge now as well in the back line. Is that something that's been overlooked a small little bit?
Yeah.
You know, and, it was very evident the other night that the one try we did get apart from the penalty try, which for me was never a penalty try, but the only try we got apart from that came from the hooker.
Yeah, Munster are usually reliant on their pack, line out and ball in particular. It's skill sets, to be honest, to break it back down. It's literally Irish players, particularly Indigenous Irish players, don't have the skill set. They're not coached that from a young age. They're coached to hit a ruck and go around corners and kick the corners, because apparently that's what people like to watch.
But when we had a coach that actually wanted to go wide, we weren't happy either.
Yeah, we got rid of him.
Yeah. So,
well, I didn't get rid of him, but
he was gotten rid of by, you know, and a lot of supporters weren't happy with the style of rugby that he was playing, despite the fact that he took us to successive semi-finals in a European competition that we haven't failed to get out of the group from since he left.
He was trying to get tries.
And if you remember some of the tries we did score under Penny Wrexham, look, I personally think taking over a province in this country at the moment is a bit of a poison chalice, because it's much like running a club team at the moment. You just don't know who you have. This weekend, Leicester Tigers will play a game and they can pick and choose who they want to play, and then they can pick and choose who they want to play next week. Munster this week can't play certain players against the Dragons. The IRFU player welfare programme kicks in. Some of them are being rested by their employers. They happen to play for Munster, but they're employed by the IRFU.
But a point that we've made numerous times, why don't Munster come out and say that then? I mean, there was no word at all last week about Simon Zeebo. It was almost as if he had disappeared off the face of the earth. Maybe he was down in the south of France trying to sign for his new club or something. But, you know, And then it emerges, a question was asked of Anthony Foley afterwards. Oh, was Simon Zeebo injured? Oh, no, he was just rested by the IRFU. Why not come out at the start of the week and say, the following is the list of players that are injured / rested like other provinces do?
I don't know.
Okay, yeah, I know.
Every week at press conferences, in particular with Munster Rugby, you almost have to go through the team in your head forensically and pick out, instead of, you say, a bit of transparency, like trying to catch people out. That's not what we're in the business of, you know. And I would love to sell the message of how Munster are, because, like, you know, being involved in sport yourself, if you don't have a full deck to play with, then tell people you don't have a full deck to play with. Don't be judged on what people think. I live a lot of my life by perception is your reality. What people perceive. So people last week were saying, why is he resting Simon Zeebo? Or is Simon Zeebo injured? Or is Simon Zeebo gone to France? Let's come out and say he's rested. That actually buys you more time. Mm-hmm. You know, if anything, I would be saying at the start of the year, I'm going to give 50 players a taste of Munster rugby. I'm going to build something here. Pat Lam has done it. You know, we're going to build slowly. Rob Penny was trying to do it. He spoke about, I need to change the culture of Munster rugby. Yep. And people give out, oh, we like going around the corner and, you know, like kicking the ball away and the crowd goes mad. And like, what's that about? Like, his philosophy was, can we not hold on to the ball? And then, ironically, our new lowest point is we're beaten by a team up the road who held on to the ball.
The fallout from last week is Munster now have to get above Connacht. Yeah?
Yeah, absolutely.
Basically, in the league, like.
But can they finish below Connacht and above Ulster, will that still get them into the Champions League?
It's only one team from each country is guaranteed to go through. So let's say if the four Irish provinces finish in the top six,
okay,
let's say Scottish and Welsh are the next two, then one of the Irish teams would miss out because an Italian team has to get in. Do you know what I mean? You're better off finishing the top.
Yeah, you have to finish above another province and you're pretty much home and hosed.
Yeah.
Okay.
Easier said than done. Particularly when the back half of this season is going to be, like, Robbie Henshaw's injured now, he's out as well, Conor Murray's injured. A lot of the World Cup squad picking up injuries. The back end of the season is going to be hugely competitive in Pro 12 because you'll probably be out of the Heineken Cup by Christmas. Some of the Leinster will be anyway. So then they'll kick into Pro 12 mode, and then they start picking up wins on the road, and you don't because you're still in another competition. It gets very messy.
Well, it's a massive 6 weeks now, or 7 weeks for Munster, because you have the back-to-back Leicester games. Then in the new year, you mentioned you have Leinster on 27th of December. Yeah. You have Ulster on the 2nd of January. You're in France the weekend of the 8th, 9th. And then you're at home against Stade Francais. And then you're off to Treviso. Like, you know, and this coming on the back of a defeat to Connacht. So you have to get a victory, do you, against the Dragons this weekend. And you have to beat Leicester at home or else...
Oh, absolutely. The next 2 weeks, yeah, non-negotiable. Plus, I touched on it this week, the biggest thing for me in the next 4 weeks is contracts. Because Conor Murray, Keith Earls, Dave Kilcoyne, Simon Zeebo, they're the big four. The IRFU will be dealing with three of them, I think, directly, maybe four of them, directly to hold on to them. If they're all kept, then there's a huge lift for the province. Like CJ Stander re-signed this week for 2 years. If two or three of them go, where's the goodwill then? You know, fans are going to be upset. What Munster team is going to be playing against Leinster if they're beaten by Leicester twice, which is possible. Leicester mangled Bat last week. We saw what Bat did to Leinster. You know, you could be out of the, you could be out of the Champions Cup. Your players could be leaving. This is worst case scenario. Now, I'm not saying we want this to happen.
Yeah, but
come January, you could be travelling to France and Treviso already out of a tournament and already losing players for next year.
And you look at it with the Leicester game. Like, Thomond Park is no longer a fortress to anybody, I think it's fair to say. But even if it was, Leicester would be coming with the mentality that, well, we're first team to beat them in Europe in their own backyard. So they, even if Munster had beaten everybody else and were still the kingpins at home, which they're no longer, that air of invincibility has gone over Thomond Park as well.
But it's even little things like squad depth. I think Leicester beat Bath, as I said last week. They had Kitchener and Croft on the bench. Two England internationals. You know, Munster are using Ian Keatley every week because they have no backup 10. Tyre Blaindall is injured. They have Rory Scannell on the bench. They haven't trusted Rory Scannell, much like they didn't trust JJ. And Keatley continues to play. If Keatley picks up an injury, what are you left with? You know, that's how threadbare they've become. And that's why I was saying earlier, personally speaking, it's easy for me to say sitting on the outside. This is the week to blood 10 or 12 lads. You know, give them their go.
But the flip side of that is they're going into it needing a win.
They are. But if you tell people at the start of the year, you know, I'm going to play as many players.
People ultimately want success done, you know. I mean,
they're not going to get success with the squad that they have. That's not Anthony Foley's fault. Anthony Foley doesn't have an open checkbook. Every single player he wants to sign, from a player from Gary Owen to a player from Toulon, the RFU have to sanction. It's a horrible position to be in.
What about the outlook then for the three games, or the four games particularly, or five games, as it will be over the Christmas/New Year period before we come back?
I think they'll be alive in the Champions Cup still. I think they'll beat Leicester at home. The away game then could be the one loss, and then the French game, Stade, becomes huge. The Leinster game used to be a big thing. If Joe Schmidt probably will pull everyone because of the refixed Champions
European
Cup game.
Cup,
I would expect Ireland squad to meet up over Christmas, and that they won't play in the Leinster game, I would presume. But those results don't really matter if you're out of the Champions Cup, because that's all Munster fans are interested in.
Okay. It could be an interesting Christmas for Munster fans. It will be an interesting Christmas regardless, because, you know, you have the build up with the two games against Leicester, then you have, as we say, the Leinster game on the 27th, the Ulster game the 2nd, and then off to France. And you're hoping that if you get the win against Leicester, regardless of what happens at Welford Road, you're still alive going to Paris anyway. So that then automatically becomes a huge game. So we'll wait and see. Interesting times over the festive period. Plenty for Anthony Foley to chew on over his Christmas dinner, I'm sure. Be looking forward to that. Just in terms of other sporting events, I suppose, that will happen over the festive period, an international event that is heavily around Limerick is the Andy Lee defending his world title. It's still on as we speak. It's Billy Joe Saunders. I'll believe it when I see the two of them coming into the ring in Manchester on the 19th of December. The build-up to it, Jerome, I suppose it's been quiet enough because there's been so many build-ups.
It's been muted because people are just...
Is it really going to happen?
Yeah, and like, look, ultimately everyone's thinking, pity it's not in Limerick. Mm. And that's what it boils down to, you know. It's the big night that we thought was going to be in Limerick and just didn't materialise. From Andy's point of view, it's almost a year to the day and he's defending his title for the first time. Okay, he's had a fight in between, but it wasn't a title defence. So it's almost 12 months to defend the world title. He definitely wanted this fight to come before then. It's a huge fight. Okay, he's been world champion, but you want to defend it. And the fact that it's, you know, reasonably close to home, you know, it's going to be available for people to watch, albeit on subscription. I think it's a massive fight for him. He, you know, I've seen a couple of interviews with him and you can just, I think you can see from him that he really, really, really wants this win.
He's world champion. And you can't take that away from him until the 19th of December and hopefully it'll still be with him. But is this the fight that defines his career? You know, I don't think
this is the fight that defines it, but I just get the sense that to defend his title to him will mean a lot. That, okay, he's been there, but it feels a little bit... I get the sense that people just want him to prove himself one more time. Mm. You know, and that, like, his world title
Has he not proved himself by winning the world title? He totally has proved himself.
You know, he's lost a world title fight. He's won a world title fight. He didn't get a gimme title, you know. He worked his way towards it. But I just get the sense that, you know, people would like him to prove himself just one more time. He doesn't have to do that by any means. He'll always be a world champion. But I think it would be a big win for him. Mm. And it would open, you know, it'll open him to the mega things then. You know, you're talking about unification fights at that stage and you're talking about real, real big days, big paydays, massive, US side. It's a really important fight for him to win.
Are they getting excited in Castleconnell, Dan?
They are, yeah. And that's just a point I was going to pick up on because the mood on the ground there is, it's almost a Limerick-esque sporting thing of... It's a massive fight for Andy Lee and his supporters now because it's obviously current and he wants to defend his title. But forever, he's going to have been a world champion. Mm. End of. So in 15 years' time, when two Limerick lads are on a bar stool anywhere in the world, they'll say, well, should we have a world champion boxer? You know, they won't remember a Billy Joe Saunders or the next fight or the next fight or the next fight. Right now, though, I agree with Jerome, and as you say as well, his own legacy, he'd like to defend the title. And Billy Joe, I think, is kind of getting under his skin the longer the fight build-up has gone on. That's adding to it.
Has he gotten the credit he deserves for winning the world title? You know, amongst the... I know here in Limerick, everybody, even before he was world champion, considered him an absolute hero and an absolute gentleman. But nationally, internationally, has he gotten the credit that he deserves, as you say, for winning a proper world title?
In the boxing community, he's massively respected, both in and outside the ring. But I mean, the reality is boxing is still a minority sport. Mm. And, you know, from that scale, he's not going to get a coverage that an Irish rugby team will get or an Irish soccer team or All-Ireland hurling champions
or
whatever.
But what about Conor McGregor gets...
Please don't.
No, but the Conor McGregor coverage is very. I think the Conor McGregor coverage is very clickbait based.
In terms of,
it's just you'll never guess what Conor Murray did today, or Conor McGregor. Conor Murray, you never guess what Conor Murray did today. That's tomorrow's exclusive. That's tomorrow's exclusive. Ruined. Apologies. But
that's a story for another day.
Like, Conor McGregor was on Jimmy Kimmel, I think it was last night, and it's just, you know, oh, you'll never guess what he said on TV, and he's put up. That's just. But casual interest in sport. It's not the same. The respect that Andy Lee has, obviously, here is massive. Internationally, yes, I think, because he fought in America. He's not had a massive knockout in America. The one thing for me, I think the box needs to be ticked is probably England, Great Britain, in that he probably needs a good fight over there because that is a huge base for boxing currently as well. And if he wins in the big Manchester card and retains his title, he might get more coverage.
Just an interesting one that arises out of Conor McGregor, because obviously the publicity surrounding him is just absolutely phenomenal. And you talk about boxing being a minority sport. UFC, I think, is far more in the minority, but yet receives far more coverage of it. Is it better to be respected and not get the publicity like Andy is, or to be... Conor McGregor is obviously respected in a lot of circles. you know, but there seems to be a pantomime around the UFC coverage.
As a person and as a character, if I was to take who would I rather be? I'd rather be Andy Lee 100 days out of 100. But I mean, I have zero interest in UFC. But do I respect for Conor McGregor for what he's done? Yes, I have. You know, like physically what he's doing is incredible. You know, it's not like he's, you know, carrying a beer belly or anything like that. I mean, his physique is unbelievable. But I mean, would you see Andy Lee doing a Living with Andy Lee or what? I don't even know what the shows are called surrounding McGregor. But I mean, he's a different character.
But he's getting the publicity. He's getting money as
totally,
a result of it.
He's looking for it.
Yeah. I mean, if Andy Lee wanted to do that and come live with me and I'll go here and do that, that's fine. That's his character. He doesn't want to. That's the character I would rather be or have, you know, some belong to me be. But I mean, I wouldn't, you know, give out about Conor McGregor for doing that. That's his route. And he has absolutely mastered it. I mean, it's an unbelievable PR machine. It's incredible. You know, it's a blueprint for anyone to follow that wants to go down that route. But I mean, you don't have to have the world living in your back pocket to be an incredible sports person. And that's what Andy Lee is.
A lot of experts are finding Lee Saunders exceptionally difficult to call. Obviously, our hearts and everything is saying Andy Lee is going to win it. But is this going to be one of the toughest fights he's had?
Saunders seems to be just so unpredictable, both in and out of the ring. He's dangerous. You know, he's dangerous because he's so unpredictable. I think Lee is a better boxer. I think he's a more intelligent boxer. I think he's got more power. I think he's got more experience. But then you just throw the complete, you know.
If he becomes involved in a scrap, a bit like the Brian Vera situation, is that where he's susceptible and will Saunders go out like that?
Yeah, but that's where the key thing for me is Brian Vera. He's learned so much since then. Like, I'm not quite sure, apart from beating Chris, from beating Eubanks, like, what has Saunders done, really? You know, I seen an interview from him during the week and he's talking about, oh, I beat this guy, he's an amateur, and that guy is an amateur. Yeah, that's grand, like, Andy Lee did that 15 years ago, like, and has boxed half the world as a professional since. You know, I just, you know, it's a bit like saying earlier that, you know, I always expected Munster to come through in the end when push came to shove against Connacht in the old days because they were the, you know, they'd been there, done that. I think at the end of the day, hopefully Lee will tick all those boxes and come through.
I think one of the things Andy Lee said prior to the Thomond Park fight was he was worried the emotion of the night would take over his tactical ability to fight Saunders because he was worried about Saunders brawling, as you were saying, you'll get into a scrap. The fact it's in Manchester now would probably be cool, calm head for Lee, and Saunders might actually be a little bit more put off by the home crowd, bigger crowd for him. Andy Lee has the ability to knock anyone out in a split second. And if Saunders, as Jerome says, probably hasn't fought as classy a fighter as Lee, he's going to leave himself open on some stage. It could be lights out.
Well,
yeah, Lee needs to, and I'm no doubt like, they don't need us to be saying it here, like, but the opening 2-3 rounds are vital for him. Can't go into this thing where he's been in the last 2-3 fights.
Coming from behind.
From behind, you know, especially in Manchester. Like, I mean, Lee's the visitor, like, let's be honest, he's the world champion, but Saunders has Frank Warren and the home crowd behind him, so, you know, Tyson Fury did okay in Germany last week, but, you know, you need to make sure it's a clear cut win when you're going away like that.
Okay, well, we'll wait and see, but that should be a great night, and let's hope that Andy Lee can do it in terms of retaining his championship. And well, it's going to be cracking night, the 19th of December, and looking forward to that one in Manchester. That's actually the night before the return leg of Munster Leicester in the European Cup, and I know quite a few people are going over and making a nice weekend out of it. People shall remain nameless. The Christmas Racing Festival, of course, goes on in Limerick over the 4 days from St. Stephen's Day to the 29th, as always. Far too early to say what we'll see there, but we've seen some wonderful horses coming out of Christmas racing festivals in past, like the Felix Younger was beaten actually in Limerick, I think, in his one of his maiden voyages, and has gone on to bigger and better things. And we've seen champion or Cheltenham winners start their career in Limerick, so looking forward to that.
I'd say it's probably not too early to put out the old Child of Prague statue at this stage. Even
I met Conor O'Neill for lunch this afternoon, and he Tommy that,
it's,
you know.
It's on the track already.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That he's praying for frost. He's about the only man in Ireland, I'd say, that's praying for frost, but wants the rain to stop and doesn't want it to turn into a mud bat. But we'll wait and see. Wait and see. Should be four great days of racing, as always. Before, that's pretty much, I think, the sport that we have over the next few weeks, isn't it? In terms of headline acts.
What about the darts?
The World Darts Championship. No Limerick player in it this year.
Not watching it, so.
Connie Finnan and William O'Connor just... didn't
it's on Sky Sports again this year.
It is?
Even though it's on the sport.
Yeah. I'm not rising
sport,
to it, Don.
It's on Sky Sports, so it must be huge.
I'm not rising to that one, Don.
Where did BT get a hold of it? It'd be a big deal then.
They have the BDO darts, which isn't a sport. Right. Review of the year then. The sporting story of the year, lads, I think ultimately ended in failure, perhaps. Limerick FC. Their run to get out of the relegation quagmire they were in, or maybe I'm wrong, maybe there was a different sporting story of the year. Limerick's under 21 hurlers maybe might battle them for it. Anybody else of a sporting story of the year? But was it Limerick FC?
Limerick FC is probably the Limerick sports story of the year because, you know.
This is the Sporting Limerick podcast.
Coming from nowhere. All aboard the bandwagon for it to end in unlimited heartbreak. It's a microcosm for everything that we cover, to be honest. Because, you know, as much as excited as we should get about under 21 hurling titles, you know, we still know at the end of the day, unless we're standing in the steps of the Hogan Stand in September, it's not going to mean anything in the grand scheme of things. But yeah, look, return to the Markets Field, massive crowds. You know, Limerick FC was the talk of the country for a while and they've signed a good few players for next season. So, yeah, that was probably, yeah, the Limerick story of the
I see the FAI sent out a press release through the week saying that attendances in League of Ireland games were up and Limerick were up 48% on last season. Now, I would imagine it was probably for the last, what was it, 8 home games, those attendances spiked. Because up to that, the attendances were on par with last season. So, just goes to show what a bit of a run can do.
I think, you know...
Were they the sporting story? Sorry, Jerome.
Were they the sporting story? Well, you can ask 10 people and you'll probably get 6 different answers at least. Mm-hmm. It was a massive story, number one, because senior soccer returned to the Markets Field and it's, you know, pretty impressive stadium in its current form. Two, they captured the imagination of so many for a 2-3 month period. Ultimately, they fell at the final hurdle, but, I mean, it was an unbelievable story why it lasted. Elsewhere, 21 hurlers, you know, definitely any time in Ireland comes, regardless of the grade, it's to be massively welcomed. After that, I'm no doubt we're forgetting something.
I'm just thinking the amount of hours of work that have been put in.
Is that all we have to show for?
52 weeks of blood, sweat, and tears. One was a relegation, the other one was under 21. The under 21. I think you touched on it last week, Jerome. The under 21 final and the performance of the team in the final and the pitch invasion.
Moment of the year.
Yeah, definitely. A Limerick team to perform non Ireland final is hen's teeth in itself, but yeah, phenomenal.
Yeah, that's an easy one for me. Yeah. All Ireland final for Wexford.
Do they get Team of the Year award then as well? I should really have
you should have told us there was awards, as
opposed to the long protracted silences from everybody.
Is it Team of the Year or Limerick Team of the Year?
Limerick Team of the Year, yeah.
Yeah. 21s, yeah. I think just the way that we spoke about it again, I'm repeating myself, Shane O'Neill's Napiershig, the way they're carrying themselves at the moment, but the way John Fitz's 21s carried themselves throughout the year. Incredible. Particularly that comment after the one that earned.
John Kiley, because I know him. Because I know he listens. He'd be giving out to us.
Yeah, it's a busy time of the year in school.
It's two Freudian slips. But John Kiley,
busy time in
John Kiley's team about fulfilling their potential, not about winning things. Just fulfill your potential for all coaches. That was a brilliant comment to make. Is he manager of the year then as well?
I'm still quiet because I know there's a pile of things we're forgetting.
I'm just delighted to ask the questions here.
Well, there was nothing else in GA. And there was nothing in rugby, was there?
World Cup, you know.
Young Munster.
No, I mean, you're good. I mean.
Young Munster, I suppose.
Yeah, semi-final of the Ireland League. Yeah.
A cracking game beaten by the eventual winners, I think, wasn't it?
That
went on to win it. And a cracking game of rugby.
Yeah. And
an awful pity it wasn't on television.
Yeah.
Better than half the...
half the rugby that we watch.
Yeah.
The biggest thing there is the budgets that they're dealing against. Mm. You know, incredible performance. You can even see it this year. So far, we're halfway through the season this Saturday. Dublin teams at the top of 1A, 1B, non-Munster teams anyway, at the top of 2A and 2B, and Old Crescent are flying the flag from Munster Club's top of 2C. It's just the power and the depth is gone from what it used to be in Limerick rugby. But they'll be back.
Soon, maybe, to see amalgamations between clubs. Is that a million miles off? Because, you know, we've seen it in GAA clubs.
They'll be cut off as opposed to amalgamate.
When you say cut off,
there's five divisions at the moment.
Yeah,
I would envisage the RFU, in their infinite wisdom, will reduce the AIL to two divisions and send everyone else back to regional. That's the plan, I hear.
Okay.
Which would mean that four or five of the senior seven clubs would be just relegated to junior
clubs,
unfortunately.
Interesting. In terms of any other big sporting stories that happened over the course of the year. I don't think there was. And as there's somebody probably listening to the podcast
screaming
now going, listen to those idiots there, and they're forgetting about.
That's just disappointing again. Like Kilmallock, St. Patrick's Day. You know, same old story. Got, you know, just Limerick and heartbreak. Senior hurlers, we covered that last week.
We did. We covered the GAA, I think, well last week.
Soccer didn't end too well. Gaelic football didn't end too well. I mean, Newcastle West.
Stop.
Just, like, talk about crying into your pints at Christmas.
Stop.
But that, just on that, and you're talking about the amount of sport we cover. Like, I mean, a lick of paint away from beating Clonmel commercials. That shot off the post.
You trying to make me feel better, Dan, or are you just rubbing it in?
But when you talk about, like, that's people, something we forget that. Like, it's just...
You talk about the record of Limerick clubs, and you said, is there their shite in Munster Club Championship? But you forget about the...
Like, myself and Jerome, and we both said it now, I'm about to hang you, but we can go back on the tapes. The two of us said, Newcastle West and Clonmel were like, the pick of these two teams wouldn't trouble the Kerry Cork.
Yeah, we were talking about it at halftime.
At halftime.
We said if the Neymar lads were here, they'd be gone.
Yeah, if Neymar
home,
watching this, they're thinking, lovely.
And they probably were there and probably were thinking that way.
Yeah.
That's why they got beat on Sunday.
You know, it's incredible. Like. Yeah. Newcastle West will rule that for a long time.
Just goes to show, put your mind to it and anything is possible.
The margins are tiny.
Tiny.
Like, that's what it boils down to. Limerick FC, Limerick Hurlers, you know, whoever else just falls short. It's the margins are so tiny, hence why any winning team in any sport, afterwards when you're doing the interviews and whatever final it is, you'll hear the same things. Everything was right, everyone bought into it, you know,
got a bit of luck,
everyone got behind
way.
It, we got a bit of luck, we were all in thinking the same way, you know. It's the winners that you get those comments from at the end of the year, and that's why, you know, absolutely every little minute detail and a little bit of rubber and green has to go your way to get ultimate success. Doesn't matter what sporting field you're in.
I think it's just a comment to make then at the end of that, from a reporting point of view, and obviously the 2E reports and have a lot more than me, the way that the local media, in particular in Limerick, report on things is that exactly. We report on what's happened. And I think sometimes the fans of all sports are very quick to be critical. Was it TJ touched on it? Those that don't know you the most don't understand what you're doing, or whatever way he put it. Like, people will make a comment after a Munster hurling final, you lose by a point, that, oh, they shouldn't have played him there, or they were out last week doing this training, or they were overdoing that. Like, it's literally the width of a hurler, the width of a post, or the lick of paint on a crossbar that is the difference between two teams. Not what you did 6 months ago, or not because Johnny X was dropped and Billy Y was picked. These people are doing these jobs and it's massive things to get right. That's why it's so hard to win.
Looking forward to 2016 then. Obviously, when we're here in 12 months' time, we'll hope that we've an awful lot more positive things to say than we have today. Limerick FC to get back to the Premier Division and hurlers and footballers to have a good solid season, Munster to be still in the European competition in quarter-final stages, win the Pro 12, Andy Lee to defend his title in Thomond Park or the Gaelic Grounds, and I think, you know, that'll be a decent enough year, won't it?
You're easily satisfied, aren't you?
I think the Limerick Senior Hurlers will win something.
The Waterford Crystal again.
The Waterford Crystal, hopefully.
Back to back. I think they'll win 1B. Definitely. I think the Pearcy will win the Ireland Club.
Mm.
They're my locks for 2016.
Okay. That's your look.
That'll be a start.
Limerick FC winning the first division has to be a done deal. They have to sign.
They have
that.
To win it.
Yeah, not that it's a walk.
Yeah, yeah. They have to win it.
Yeah.
Given the money they've put in terms of players and re-signings. Just before we finish up, an interesting point. Steve Walsh, 28-year-old, retired from Intercounty Hurling the other day, follows David Breen, who's taken a year out, or maybe longer, but he hasn't retired, just taken a step back. Due to the increasing demands is a statement that has been put out by everybody, pretty much, that has retired from all over the country. Due to increasing demand, that they just don't have time to do it anymore. Are we looking at a situation in a few years' time where the voluntary player, and I said voluntary, you know, in terms of the amateur GAA player, will be of no more?
It's a massive commitment, and, you know, it's very hard for people to understand how much of a commitment it actually is. Pretty much a 12-month of the year commitment now. It's not like you can, you know, hang up the hurley in August or September when you're knocked out and not look at a gym or a field again till the next January. It continues from. It's absolutely massive. And I mean, we're in an employment environment now as well where jobs aren't exactly plentiful. You know, not every employer will give you 5 or 6 hours off during the week. You know, for the money you're being paid, someone else will do it and they'll work the full hours. That environment has changed from maybe 10 years ago. And the flip side also has changed is the commitment levels. I mean, you now have a situation where you have guys sitting at the breakfast table and putting into an app on their phone what they just ate and how many pints of milk and how many pints of water and whether they had sugar or whatever they had. Same for lunch, the same for tea, how many hours they slept, what time they went to bed, what time they got up. You know, these guys are professional and we've heard it so many times in every way, barring money. But I mean, that's the reality of it from a GA point of view. It's huge, you know.
Is there only so much of it you can do for the love of the game, as the saying goes? Because that's what they do it for, ultimately, to get abuse on a Saturday night after they get beaten or a Sunday. And, you know, we saw it in Thurles where supporters came down onto the sideline, confronted management players and called them all sorts of useless people, you know. Is it worth all that effort? You know, it is obviously on a good day when you win a game and that sort of thing. But, you know,
if you aspire to play to a level, you know, you're in this bubble and you buy into it, and that's it's part of your life. You know, you aspire to be as fit as you can and to play as good as you can, and like, if you're in there, I think it's a wonderful place to be, and how many people would give their left and right arm to be in that position. But I mean, from an abuse point of view, you know, just not on, like, but I mean, that's the raw emotion of sport, maybe on a day or whatever. But I mean, what they put in is phenomenal right now, and I'm not sure can it go much further. Maybe it's going to go and hit a wall and just someone somewhere is going to shout stop. But I mean, right now, the technology and the science behind it is phenomenal.
You'd see it done from UL Boa's point of view. I mean,
I to be honest with you, like, it's going to get to a point where there aren't any more hours, because
like a 28-year-old should be in the prime of his career, not retiring because he doesn't have not just that he doesn't have time to go training. It's obviously a lot more than that, but you know, he should be coming to the pinnacle of his career, should be, but instead he's to retire because just doesn't have the time.
Just from my own experience of dealing with lads, and you kind of look at them now from, you know, a married with a kid kind of timetable, and you look at what they have to do, and you know, they're only new into a job or just new out of college or whatever. Like, the 2 hours or the 3 hours, let's say 3 hours of a Tuesday, Thursday that you're at training, you know, arriving or getting physio or getting ready to go out and train and eating a meal afterwards. Like, take that out of the week. Everyone is kind of doing that. That's your club player county players. Yeah. Everyone is doing that.
That's your ordinary person that goes to the gym and stuff exactly. like that. Yeah.
The stuff outside of that is your own touchdown with your food diet, your food diaries, your PAMs, your weights in the gym then have to be done separate nights. Your recovery has to be done. Like, rest is as important as any gym session. Then you've got to throw in a couple of games, a trial match, a travelling and work and family lifestyle. Like, the prime example, I remember a couple of years ago, people were laughing at it. Ahead of a Munster final, John Allen telling the players, whatever you do, don't go to the cinema. Don't sit in the one place for too long. It's not good for the legs. Do you know, the time off isn't even really time off, because everything you do has a consequence in the back of your head towards Saturday. Like, we were above in Ballymena last week for a match, so we travel Friday, you're gone Friday night, you're not back till Saturday night late, so you don't see friends and family for two solid days. We play a team, you know, they've got GPS packs on, you know, the science behind how far they travel in the game, the statisticians are behind them, that guy is going to be picked out this week, did he run enough, is he fit enough? It's an amateur game. You know, is it all just for the big roar of the crowd 60, 65 minutes in Semple Stadium in Thurles? I'm sure that's a huge buzz, but people are beginning to realise that it's way too much of an ask for the return. And people abusing people. That's going to leave radio silence there. Like, how dare anyone come down out of a stand and abuse somebody who's putting their life on hold to provide entertainment?
Well, I'd imagine that's probably, you know, that gentleman or...
No, but you know, it's probably, not coming down out of a stand. Yeah, but like, yeah, even yeah. social media comments.
Yeah.
You know, a guy, like, talk about the complete polar opposite, like, you know, after a few points, goes on to social media and has a go at a player who's been off drinking, hasn't eaten a bar of chocolate in 12 months. Do you know? Like, oh, you were crap today. What? You don't know that person. Yeah.
Interesting. I'm sure maybe another retirement or two to come from the Limerick Senior Hurling squad. I don't know, maybe there's not. Over the next few weeks, but we'll wait and see. Could be a new look Limerick squad next year, Jerome.
Yeah, it'll be a new look Limerick team, probably.
Well, no David Breen, who would be a regular starter. Steve yeah. Walsh in and out of the team, I suppose you could
pretty
say.
Pretty much in it in this year as it is. It is. And I mean, look, you know, we've gone to the well for maybe 3-4 years now with pretty much 18-19 players. So, and falling short. So, I mean, is it time to freshen it up? Yeah, it is time to freshen it up. If the young lads are good enough to force one or two out, so be it. If they need another year, so be it. But, I mean, they're back, they're working already. You know, it's not for the want of trying. It's, no, they can be back.
Yeah, no, they're allowed to be back.
They're allowed. We're allowed to say they're back now. You know, it won't be for the want of trying. And, I mean, that's the basic requirement of what we would ask of them. And, you know, I think they're ticking that box and have for the last couple of years. If guys are off form or whatever, I mean, there's a lot more going on than just on the field. But, I mean, hopefully it won't be for the want of trying anyway.
Okay, well, we'll wait and see. 2016, bring it on. Now, we're off for the Christmas party, lads. Dan, you're buying the first round. Don O'Sullivan of the Limerick Post, Jerome O'Connell of the Limerick Leader, thank you very much for all your efforts in 2015 and to all our contributors. Just Andrew Kinnean, I think, was the only one that added extra, wasn't it? to the podcast, Kieran O'Brien.
Kieran O'Brien. Probably had Liam Torr at some stage.
Liam Torr was there as well, yeah. I don't think Colm Kinsella came at all in 2015.
Couldn't afford him this year.
All right, okay.
Budget was spent on last year's Christmas party.
We'll spend it again tonight. Lads, thanks. And we'll talk to you in the new year. Have a good Christmas and enjoy the sport. Good luck.